News. Iran's president addressed a summit of the Economic Cooperation Organization in the Turkmen capital, Ashgabat. Australia joins a growing list of countries where cases of South Africa's new coronavirus variant are being detected. And Asians complain about being treated as unwelcome guests in Britain to report from a protest in London coming up. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. A short while ago, Iran's president addressed a summit of the Economic Cooperation Organization in the Turkmen capital, Ashgabat. He called for closer cooperation among member states and efforts to boost the organization's efficacy. Ebrahim Raisi said member states need to work together closely on all fronts. He called for the establishment of a regional regional electricity market, the implementation of water transfer projects, as well as more activities in the energy sector. The president also called for the promotion of economic cooperation. He said Iran stands ready to help connect fiber optic networks of member states, as well as promote artificial intelligence projects and virtual education. He then called for a new financial mechanism within the organization to boost its efficiency. He said that U.S. sanctions will not affect Iran's policy of constructive interaction and cooperation with its neighbors. November 27th marked the first anniversary of Israel's assassination of prominent Iranian scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. That was part of Israel's long-running objectives to hamper advancements made in Iran's nuclear program, but anti-Iran plots have proven ineffective as Tehran continues to make progress with its peaceful nuclear program.
Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, the former head of the Iranian Defense Ministry's Organization of Defensive Innovation and Research, was assassinated on November 27, 2020, when the car he was riding in came under attack near his countryside residence east of Tehran. Fakhrizadeh had reportedly been on Israel's hit list since at least 2007.
This is how Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, head of Project Abad, put it. Remember that name, Fakhrizadeh.
But he wasn't the only Iranian scientist to have been targeted by Israel. The regime made several assassination attempts between 2007 and 2012 that claimed the lives of four nuclear scientists and wounded another. That's on top of sabotage attacks on Iran's nuclear sites that have become more frequent over the past months. Iran has vowed to continue the work on its peaceful nuclear program. The international community, however, was largely silent over the recent assassination, a similar attitude of indifference that displayed toward Israel's airstrikes on Syria and its aggression on the Palestinian people.
The point is simple. Israel is America's most important friend and ally in the Middle East and in North Africa. Israel is exempt from prosecution in the eyes of America simply because without Israel, America's position in the Middle East and in North Africa would be in serious jeopardy.
Iran has vowed a harsh response against those behind the attacks on Iranian nuclear scientists and sites.
American officials have reportedly warned Israel that its attacks on Iran's nuclear program will prove counterproductive. They say the regime's actions have enabled Iran to rebuild an even more efficient enrichment system. The reports say Israel has rejected the U.S. warning, saying it won't shift its anti-Iran policies. This implies that Israel may continue targeting Iran's nuclear facilities and scientists.
report published by the New York Times suggests that the United States has called on Israel to stop its attacks on Iran's nuclear program, suggesting that they could help strengthen Iran's capabilities. The article cites officials familiar with the discussions who said Washington has told Tel Aviv that the attacks are ultimately counterproductive, as Iran has been able to replace the damaged centrifuges with newer and much more capable ones within months. According to the article, the U.S. officials have admitted that Iran has improved its defenses, including with regard to its cybersecurity, rendering an attack similar to the Stuxnet virus extremely difficult to succeed. Israeli officials have reportedly rejected the U.S. call, saying they don't have any intention of ending their anti-Iran policies. Yet the credibility of the whole report is under question, as Washington and Tel Aviv hardly disagree on matters, especially in the case of Iran.
The Americans understand that Israel's actions often cannot be defended publicly, so it cannot always be seen in public as siding with the Israelis. So that is why from time to time the Americans will issue a public statement saying that they have issued a caveat to Tel Aviv about their actions vis-a-vis Lebanon or vis-a-vis Iran.
The report could also be a scare tactic in an attempt to obtain concessions ahead of the key talks in Vienna on the obligations of the parties to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. But Iran has repeatedly stated its firm position that the talks must end in the removal of all anti-Tehran sanctions.
Saudi Arabia keeps up its military aggression against neighboring Yemen, causing more death and destruction there. The Saudi army's fires killed a Yemeni civilian in a border district in the northern Saada province. Early reports suggested that a child was seriously injured after mercenary forces linked to Saudi Arabia fired mortar shells towards a house in Al-Hudaydah province. Saudi Arabia has been running a military campaign against Yemen for about 7 years, causing the world's worst humanitarian crisis. The UN says the death toll from the war will have surpassed 377,000 by the end of the year. Concerns rising over the latest coronavirus variant called Omicron. Australia now joining the list of countries that have confirmed cases of the strain. Health officials say the strain was found after testing two passengers from southern Africa who flew into Sydney on Saturday. The Omicron has already been detected or suspected in several countries, including the UK and Germany. It has a large number of mutations with worrying characteristics. The World Health Organization says Omicron is potentially more contagious than the previous variants. Countries are scrambling to curb its spread by enforcing travel curbs.
South African airports have become a scene of stranded passengers with cancelled flights as the world races to contain the new concerning COVID-19 variant called Omicron. While inconvenient in nature, the bans have drawn mixed reactions from people most affected by the restrictions.
I'm not happy with the situation because I booked my flight on time. Everything was on time. Now I'm inconvenienced because I had to be at work tomorrow, but then they cancelled the flight. After cancelling the flight, if I arrive in the UK, because I'm quarantining in Frankfurt, if I arrive in the UK after 4 p.m., I have to quarantine in a hotel on my cost for 10 days. I don't have the money, I don't have the £2,000 to quarantine in the hotel.
The countries that are banning South Africans out have higher rates than we currently do. So I don't think it's totally fair, but I get that countries are just trying to protect themselves and their citizens.
Meanwhile, South Africa, enraged by the restrictions, says it is being punished for being the first country to detect and report the strain, which the World Health Organization has termed a variant of concern.
Based upon the information that we have, particularly from South Africa, they have advised WHO that this variant should be classified as a variant of concern.
Following the discovery, several countries have not only imposed restrictions, but also locked their first cases of the Omicron variant. The British government on Saturday announced new precautionary measures after two Omicron cases were detected in the country.
We will require all contacts of those who test positive with a suspected case of Omicron to self-isolate for 10 days, regardless of your vaccination status. We will also go further in asking all of you to help contain the spread of this variant by tightening up the rules on face coverings in shops and on public transport.
Elsewhere in Europe, Germany reported 2 cases of the Omicron variant in the state of Bavaria. In Italy, officials registered the first case of the new strain in a traveler from Mozambique. The Czech Republic and the Netherlands have each also reported 1 suspected case of the new strain. Meanwhile, Hungary says it will impose restrictions on travelers from 7 African countries. This comes while EU member states had already agreed to impose restrictions on all travel from South Africa. Iran halted travel from African countries including South Africa, Mozambique, Namibia, Zimbabwe, Botswana, Lesotho, and Eswatini until further notice. Several other countries, including Australia, the US, Brazil, and Guatemala, have either forced several travel restrictions already or are set to impose such bans this week. While scientists are still learning about the variant, the news has already taken a toll on the global economy amid fears of what the new travel bans would do to the economy still reeling from its falls in 2019. Since its emergence, COVID-19, which has claimed over 5,190,000 lives out of nearly 261 million cases, has gone through several mutations. But considering the human body's ability to fight new strains of the virus and the immunity provided by vaccines, officials across the globe continue to push for jabs in the world's fight against the pandemic.
People have gathered in London's Chinatown to protest racism. They say East and Southeast Asians feel like unwanted guests in Britain, a country that has a history of denying them equal rights, jobs, and freedoms. And COVID-19 has only made it worse. Bianca Raimi tells us more in this following report.
This is Chinatown. Each year, nearly 18 million visitors pass through it. But since the start of the pandemic in 2019, business owners here have struggled with a drop in sales, vandalism, and boycotts.
East and Southeast Asians make up the UK's third largest racial minority. Nonetheless, they are underrepresented here, depicted in a negative light on television, and anti-Asian racism is alive and well. Meanwhile, British politicians stand accused of making matters worse.
Remember Jacob Rees-Mogg, the leader of the House? Only recently he said something about yellow peril, and then he said, oh, I didn't know, it's a racist statement. That's what the British government is. They continuously making statement about, you know, Chinese and then saying, oh, I didn't know it was racist. I mean, in other circumstances, if you say the N word or the P word nowadays, everyone noticed that it is a racist term, not for the Chinese.
China's growing influence worldwide is being observed with some chagrin in Western countries. And with governments choosing to dub COVID-19 the China virus, attacks on East and Southeast Asians has gone up, in the UK by 300%.
There's a bias there. And so it's a combination of things that they feel it's a small community. They feel as if they're guests. And I think the fact that for a better part of a year now, numerous Asians, and that's not just Chinese, Koreans, Japanese, Filipinos, have been getting bashed out of them because of Donald Trump's anti-Asian rhetoric.
In 2020, British media fueled anti-Asian hate by using images of East or Southeast Asian people in 33% of COVID-19 media stories, when in reality they make up less than 2% of the UK population, and nothing was done to stamp it out.
They are complicit if only by dint of silence, and I think silence and inactivity is really, you know what they say, action speaks louder than words, isn't it?
Tensions ran high at Saturday's protest. The unverified word on the street is the counter-protest was funded by far-right nationalist groups who are using COVID-19 as an opportunity to promote anti-globalization sentiment and protectionist measures like closing borders. Bianca Rahimi, London.
France is hosting a European meeting to discuss ways to stop migrants crossing into the UK on boats, but has barred Britain itself. France is angry with British Prime Minister Boris Johnson for criticizing Paris's handling of the situation. The dispute escalated after 27 migrants drowned on Wednesday while trying to make their way from France to Britain through the Channel. Now ministers from France, Germany, the Netherlands, and Belgium set to address the crisis in the afternoon. Top on the agenda is how to tackle human smugglers that provide boats to migrants to cross the narrow waterway. It's election day in Kyrgyzstan. People are heading to the polls to vote for a new parliament. There are about 3.7 million eligible voters. They'll have to choose deputies for a downsized legislature that used to have 120 members, but now only 90 seats are up for grabs. More than 1,300 candidates are vying under a new electoral system. Parties loyal to President Sadir Japarov are expected to gain the upper hand. The vote is a rerun of last year's failed election that saw the government ousted. The 2020 elections were annulled amid street protests, with the opposition claiming widespread fraud in favor of the former president. Japarov, who was serving a jail term back then, was freed from prison in the post-election unrest. The first results are expected late on Sunday. Thousands of Peruvians want President Pedro Castillo to step down, and they've marched in the streets of Lima to have their say. Castillo has been president for just over 3 months, but his popularity has been on the decline. Opposition legislators in the Congress have even presented a motion to impeach the president, arguing he's morally unfit to rule the country. The motion needs at least 52 votes from the 130-seat body to begin the impeachment proceedings, though a vote is not yet scheduled. Castillo has promised to redistribute mineral profits more evenly, but protesters say they haven't seen that happen. They're also angry at the scandals involving several of Castillo's ministers and advisors. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
I'm Eric Shimanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, November 28, 2021. I'm Atefa Irfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through mails, emails, and letters. So please contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English Radio broadcast. If you have any messages for our great listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program, Listeners Special, the Sunday program. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. So keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back to your program, Listeners Special. As usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. As you may know, these reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, because these reception reports enable us to provide a better service, a high-quality service, to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from us in the time of pandemic, actually. So, here, I sent my appreciations to those of our great listeners who have sent us reception reports, including Han Hardung from the Netherlands, Mizanur Rahman, one of our regular listeners from Bangladesh, and Howard Barnett, also one of our regular listeners from England. Han, Mizanur Rahman, and Howard, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio and to this program, Listeners Special. And many thanks to those of our great listeners around the world who have sent us emails from around the world, including Eddie Witanto from Indonesia, of course, one of our old and regular listeners, Hasna Manzil from India, one of our regular listeners, Toshio Shibata from Japan, one of our old listeners, Dan Olson from Sweden, of course, one of our regular listeners, and Alan Willie from Canada. So, after a short break, I will be back with these great emails from around the world. Please stay with Listeners Special. Guess what? The piece of music you just heard was from south of Iran. Okay, as I said, Eddie Witanto, one of our regular listeners, sent us an email. Eddie says, firstly, let me send you my greetings from Jakarta. Thank you for your email. I tune in to the IRIB English Radio regularly because many topics and issues about Iranian culture and society and Islamic teachings are presented in the programs and they are very interesting. I hope to receive a printed QSL card soon because as a long-time shortwave listener, I still prefer the printed QSL card instead of EQSL. Best regards from Indonesia. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, and from IRIB English Radio to Eddie Witanto from Indonesia. Many thanks for sending us this email. So you tune in to the IRIB English Radio regularly. Okay, keep up the good job of listening to IRIB English Radio regularly. And thank you very much for letting us know your opinion about IRIB English Radio programs, because you said you like the programs about Iranian culture and society and the Islamic teachings that are presented in the programs, and you described it as very interesting, and that's great. Thank you for letting us know about it. So, you prefer the printed QSL card. As you may know, we can send our dear listeners the printed QSL cards in the time of pandemic, and we hope that this virus be eradicated from around the world, and then we can send our great listeners the printed QSL cards and the paper QSL cards and the promotional items of IRIB English Radio. So for the time being, we have to cope with it. We have to deal with it and send you these EQSL cards. So please accept it from us, Eddie Witanto from Indonesia. Best regards to you. Thank you very much for sending us this email, Eddie. Write to us soon. We're looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Eddie. And from India, we have an email from Hasna Manzil. Hasna is one of our regular listeners. So Hasna says, dear friends at IRIB English Radio, I am a listener of worldwide radios, and this time I had a chance to listen to IRIB English Radio based in Tehran, Iran. I would love to listen to your radio regularly, so please send me the frequency guide of your station with complete details of the programs. I shall be very grateful if you do it. Thanks and regards. Salam and warm greetings to you, Hasna Manzil from India. Please accept our appreciations to you for sending us this email. So, you regularly listen to worldwide radios, and this time you again listen to IRIB English Radio. That's great. Regarding your request about sending you frequency guide of IRIB English Radio, you can refer to our website at www.parstoday.com/en. There you can find the frequency guide of IRIB English Radio and the complete details of the programs. We are very grateful for this email from you, Hasna Manzil from India. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. Keep up the good job and listen to IRIB English Radio and listeners special. So, dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with an email from Japan, from Toshio Shibata. Stay tuned. Welcome back. Toshio Shibata, one of our regular listeners from Japan, has sent us an email. Toshio says, hello, thank you very much for sending me the EQSL for my reception of IRIB World Service. Now, I am happy to tell you that with coming of autumn to Japan, I'm seeing more and more IRIB signals arriving Japan on medium wave. On November 21st, I also received what seemed to be IRIB English Radio from Tehran. I praise IRIB engineers' good job for maintaining the transmission facilities in perfect conditions. Could you please send me an EQSL or possible QSL card for the reception I have sent you? I see the number of COVID-19 infections are rapidly decreasing in Iran. I hope the life will be back to normal soon. Best regards. Salam and warm greetings to you, Toshio Shibata from Japan, and please accept our warm gratitude to you for sending us this great email. And that's amazing. It seems that you follow up Iran's news about the developments of Iran carefully, because you know the number of COVID-19 infections are rapidly decreasing in Iran, and that's because of the vast rate of vaccination which is happening in Iran. Yes, the vaccination rate has increased in the Islamic Republic of Iran, and many people, the majority of people, have been vaccinated in Iran, and so the number of COVID-19 infections are rapidly decreasing. Thank God. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card for the reception of what you sent us, actually for the confirmation. And it seems that you are satisfied by the quality of our broadcasting, including the quality of transmission, because you said you praised our Arabian engineers' good job for maintaining the transmission facilities in perfect conditions, and that's great. Thank God. We're so glad to hear that from you. So, Toshio Shibata from Japan, write to us soon and tell us your views about the broadcast of our Arab English Radio. We also hope that the life around the world will be back to normal soon after this virus is eradicated. And from Sweden, we have an email from Dan Olson, one of our old and regular listeners. Dan Olson from Sweden says, "Dear radio friends on IRB English Radio, my name is Dan Olson and I am a Swedish radio listener. A few days ago, I had the pleasure to hear IRB. I have enclosed an MP3 file with a part from the program. I am 61 years old and I work as a teacher for children between ages 6 to 9 years old. My interests are listening to radio, doing sports, and collecting stamps. Best regards from Sweden." Salam and warm greetings to Dan Olson from Sweden, and many thanks for sending us this email. Yes, you are Dan Olson. You are a Swedish radio listener. You're 61 years old and you're a teacher, and you're doing one of the great jobs in the world being a teacher, especially for children between ages 6 to 9 years old. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card for sending us this great email. And Dan Olson, why don't you tell us your views about our programs in Arab English Radio? Yes, in your upcoming emails or letters, please tell us your opinion about IRB English Radio programs. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with an email from Alan Willey from Canada. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. Alan Willey from Canada has sent us an email. He says, "Hello, dear staff of IRB English Radio. Greetings once again from Newfoundland, Canada. Here is an initial set attached of reception reports of IRB shortwave broadcast as a monitor here in Newfoundland during the early start to the new B21 schedule of frequencies. I'd be glad to receive a paper QSL card or an EQSL from IRB English Radio if possible. Regards." Salam and warm greetings to you, Alan Willey from Canada. Thank you very much for sending us this email, this message. So you were successful in receiving the signals of IRB English Radio in your region, Newfoundland, Canada. Thank you very much for sending us this message. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card from IRIB English Radio. The frequency schedule is available at our website at www.parstoday.com/en. And time tells me we have to skip to the next section of this week's listeners special, which is, of course, guess what? Yes, this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. We hope you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, hello to our listeners via the English, especially to the listeners of Listener Special this evening. Warm greetings from Central Philippines. My name is Henry Amadhai. I am a director and radio hobbyist since 1990. And presently, I'm a presenter of Philippine DX News every Sunday over Waitsan. I'm listening to various international radio stations from all over the world. In my collection, thousands of QSL cards, including from the Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran, RID English. I think I've been listening to RRB English since 1995. I can hear current news from the Republic of Iran, pressing issues and current affairs. My favorite program, of course, is Listener Special. More than a decade ago, I can still remember you interviewed me twice in this program. And I think this is my fourth time here in your program. Yeah, to all the listeners around the world during this pandemic, keep safe and continue to listen to RID English service.
In life, here we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Please keep in touch with us and have a good time.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.parstoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with RIB English Radio.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
the spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, in a move to apparently increase the pressure on the Islamic resistance even further, recently we have seen the Palestinian group Hamas's political wing labeled by the UK government as a terrorist group, and the Lebanese resistance group Hezbollah's political faction has also been labeled as a terrorist group by Australia. As both of these organizations defend their people against terrorists, the question to be asked, perhaps, is what is terrorism and who is considered a terrorist by these countries which say they stand against terrorism, but apparently the reality is something else. What does it all mean? Stay with us as we take a look at all of this on Spotlight.
A plot to silence anti-Israel resistance groups. This is what many describe the latest move by Australia and the UK to blacklist Lebanese and Palestinian resistance movements. Canberra announced this decision on Wednesday.
Today I'm announcing my intention to list the base and the entirety of Hezbollah as terrorist organisations under the Criminal Code. Now, listing these organisations sends a very strong message that Australia condemns the use of terrorism to achieve political, ideological or religious objectives.
In 2003, Australia blacklisted Hezbollah's military wing, but Wednesday's decision expanded the list to include the group's political wing, which is a powerful player in Lebanon's politics, with seats in parliament and cabinet. On November 19, the British government did the same with the political wing of Hamas, joining the United States, Canada and the European Union in fully banning the group.
And today, I have laid an order in the United Kingdom Parliament to amend Schedule 2 of the Terrorism Act 2000 to proscribe Hamas in its entirety, including its political wing.
The decisions have been slammed by resistance groups, with Hamas calling Britain's move unlawful.
The decision is a crime against the Palestinian people and against its historical struggle. This is a condemnation of our right to defend ourselves. It is a political and ethical mistake and unlawful by Britain, added to its first crime, when they had the Balfour Declaration. This step is to satisfy the occupation.
Hezbollah has also denounced Australia's move. Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah says the decision to blacklist the group will not affect its resolve and determination.
Putting the name of Hezbollah into the list of terrorist organizations may be due to regional developments or parliamentary election. However, such designations will not affect the determination of the resistance, nor the support for it.
Both Hezbollah and Hamas have been fighting against the Israeli regime's occupation of their lands for decades. Hezbollah was established following the 1982 Israeli invasion and occupation of southern Lebanon. The movement drove out Israeli forces from Lebanon in May 2000, though Tel Aviv still occupies parts of Lebanon. Hamas also plays a significant role in defending Palestinian rights against frequent Israeli aggressions. The U.S. has already blacklisted both groups to appease the Israeli regime, which was created and nourished by Washington and its Western allies. Australia, the U.S. and Britain are now in a trilateral security pact and are not the only main suppliers of weapons to Israel, but regularly vote against anti-Israeli resolutions at the UN. Their latest moves have exposed their intentions even further, as they have chosen to support the aggressors at the expense of the victims.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the spotlight from the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign, Mick Napier, out of Edinburgh. Historian and journalist Brett Yonkers out of Hasselt.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you both for being with me. Let's start it off with Mick. Mick, your overall perspective, because as was said in the opening and also in the package, I mean, Canada and the U.S. and the EU had for years now actually said that both these organizations were terrorist organizations. It's interesting. Why do you think the UK and Australia had not done that before, and why have they done it now, in your perspective?
I mean, I can't comment on the precise timing of this. I can only take the long view and say that you asked earlier, what does terrorism mean? In the lexicon of Western governments, it simply means any movement which is opposed to their view of their own interests. Could I remind your viewers, by the way, that the only government in the world which has been found guilty by the International Court of Justice of terrorism was the USA, which way back in 86 was found guilty of supporting a terrorist movement, of illegally blockading the harbors of a sovereign country, Nicaragua, and financing the murder of health workers and education workers and so on by the Contras. If you look dispassionately, let's try that, at the deployment of violence by these governments, we find that they support terrorist organizations. If by terrorism we mean the use of violence to achieve a political goal, which of course every government in the world does, it's just the way the world is. But Britain and America and Australia and Canada, I also have a Canadian passport, have been guilty of the mass extermination of native people simply in order to seize their resources. So why shouldn't they support Israel? Look, Hezbollah fought Israel in 2006. Hezbollah overwhelmingly killed Israeli soldiers. Israel overwhelmingly killed Lebanese civilians. The arithmetic is extremely stark, but one group, of course, in official parlance is called terrorists. Hamas fight to resist the Israeli plan to take over the entirety of Palestine and to expel every single Palestinian they possibly can. They fight in a way which is in line with international law, which allows for people to resist colonization, yet in the official parlance, they are the terrorists. I mean, it makes no sense whatsoever to any honest observer, but we can only say that Britain and America and Australia and Canada, they take any regime, even one which dissolves its dissidents in acid, even one which carpet bombs civilians and openly talks about the destruction of civilian infrastructure in order to inflict pain on the population. These groups are never called terrorists, but any group, however benign. And we have to remember, six Palestinian NGOs have recently been designated as terrorists simply because they exist. That's the crime in the eyes of Australia and the USA. It makes no sense whatsoever.
Stay with me, Mick. Sorry about that. Let me get Brett in on this conversation. But in the last few years, we've seen increased pressure on all parts of the resistance, whether we're talking about Iran or Syria, Hezbollah, Yemen, or resistance groups in Iraq and elsewhere. All these groups have been the recipient of much political and economic pressure. Why is that the case, and is it indicative perhaps of the success of the resistance?
Yeah, they always say that. It's a well-known saying that a cornered wild beast is sometimes the most dangerous. And I think this is exactly what is happening. We see now over the past few decades, especially ever since the conflict in Syria started, but basically We have seen now for decades a gradual pushback happening across West Asia, across the Islamic world and beyond, in which the imperialist powers are slowly but gradually being pushed back. This is definitely this definitely came to the forefront following the 1979 Iranian revolution and the inspiration that it has offered to a lot of people across the Muslim world and across sectarian divides, Shia or Sunni alike. And we have seen a sort of resurgence in the late 20th century and, of course, in the first two decades of this century, a resurgence of domestic resistance against imperialism and against Zionism. And this is something that has rendered, I believe, which has caused a massive fear among the Zionist entity and amongst their backers and supporters in the West and across the world. And that is the reason why they have been really stepping up their pressure even more. They have been stepping up diplomatic pressure, they have been stepping up military campaigns, and they have been stepping up pressure and bribery across the Islamic world, which we have seen with the so-called Abraham Accords last year, in which countries such as Morocco and Bahrain have decided to officially collaborate with the Zionist entity, something that in many cases they were already doing secretly before, but now made it completely official and on the forefront. And I think the reason for that is that Israel has been testified by a former leader of the Internal Security Service of Israel, the Shin Bet, who spoke to a Zionist newspaper a couple of years ago, I believe. This former Shin Bet director said that demographically speaking, when things keep on going like they are right now, Israel will have most likely no future in, let's say, the coming in 30 years or so from now, you're speaking of, in about a generation, simply because of the fact that they are basically running out slowly. They're running out of numeric advantage. They're running out of colonists. They're running out of the population growth of Jewish colonists in Israel in order to take over, numerically speaking, the Palestinian people still living there. So what they feel the need to do is they want to ensure that their vision, their view, that Zionist vision of the world, which has been so omnipresent in Western media, is pushed in the minds of people even more. And that is why they have now ensured that even the normal political wing of Hezbollah and of Hamas are considered terrorist organizations in the UK, in Australia, and of course they already were in the US. And especially when you talk about Hezbollah is a legal, legitimate political party, which is supporting in many ways the current government of Lebanon. Right. So in some ways, designating Hezbollah as a terrorist organization means you designate the entire Republic of Lebanon, basically, as a terrorist organization. That is the where we have gotten to nowadays. That is the insanity that the Zionist propaganda has led us over the past year.
Well, you just mentioned, Brett, the effect of this designation. Actually, that's what I wanted to get into, Mick. As far as the effect of these designations to these organizations themselves, and also to the people living in these countries, in Australia, in the UK, who actually support these organizations, what does it mean exactly, restriction-wise, Mick?
No, very good point. It means increased repression. And the repression has been escalating for several years now, and as our other guest points out, it's not born of confidence. The Zionist project was launched in order to produce a state by cleaning out the local people, but it would be a state where Jews around the world, in Russia and Poland, could move and feel safe in this place. It would be a lifeboat state. I mean, it was always a con, but look what's happening now. In order for this state, with maybe 6 million Zionist Jews, 7 or 8 million non-Zionist people in Palestine as well, in order for this state to continue, the balancing act that they've carried out for the last few decades is becoming increasingly intricate. They remain surrounded by hundreds of millions of people in the Middle East who are hostile to the Zionist entity, who oppose it, and in order for it to survive, they need to build alliances with dictatorial regimes, the emirs and the sheikhs of the Gulf, the Egyptian regime, the Saudi regime, and so on. And they also need very determined support against their local populations by Canada, Britain, Australia, and so on. So this repression will make it more easy to shut down bank accounts, possibly to put a few more people in jail. But the movement to cleanse the Labour Party of pro-Palestine supporters in Britain has now been spreading for quite some time into academia and elsewhere. And that will continue. But designating an organization as terrorist means that the state can move against people much more quickly. As a Palestine solidarity campaign, we will continue to express our solidarity with Hamas. What Hamas says inside for internal Palestinian politics is no concern of ours. I may agree or I may disagree with their social policies. Their right to resist dispossession, their right to resist a regime which sometimes talks about pushing Gaza back to the Stone Age, where a minister of defense used the word Shoah, the Hebrew word for genocide, for Holocaust, he would inflict that upon the people of Gaza. The right of Hamas to resist that is unquestioned in international law and in decent morality. So there will come a clash. Those of us who will continue to support Hamas publicly as a resistance movement will come into conflict with the British government and other people in a similar position worldwide. So this is this fight remains to be won or to be lost. At the moment, the British government and other governments are losing the fight for public opinion. I can't stress this often enough.
Well, let me stop you right there. You just said they're losing the fight for public opinion.
No doubt.
But on the other hand, then we see this type of pressure and ramifications then of such a law, because of course there's jail time now that perhaps someone like yourself in the UK, for example, supporting our Hamas. What does that mean? Because obviously then there's even that external pressure now being put on those supporters to probably curtail that public support.
If I could just add one more point, because our other guest has many interesting things to say. They are losing the fight. By their resistance, the Palestinians, the Lebanese, and people around the Middle East are showing that resistance can be successful. The deep unpopularity of the Israeli government needs the protection of British, Canadian, and Australian governments. It's not that they're articulating public opinion. Nothing could be further from the truth. The Zionists in their intra-Zionist conversations are well aware of the crisis they face in terms of public opinion across Europe, never mind the Middle East. And this repression will continue. But my own guess is it's doomed to lose. I think we've faced this repression now in Britain, for example, for many years, certainly in the USA, where there's a bill has gone through Congress, I think. I don't know if it's been implemented, but with $1 million fines and 10-year sentences envisaged for BDS campaigners, I think this is bound to lose.
Okay.
I don't have any crystal ball, but I think they will break their teeth on resistance, because I think Palestine, if I can take one more point, is now a British domestic political issue.
Brett, after Israel has once again, in this year, 2021, waged another bloody onslaught on the highly populated Gaza Strip, killing young and old, destroying high-rise apartment buildings in front of cameras, and basically doing whatever it wanted to live. Now, we see at the same time this type of response from these various governments. But on the other hand, like Mick said, do you think that, of course, we saw with social media and showing these towers being brought down and live on TV, that it's also had a major effect on public opinion as they have seen the actual brutality of the regime that perhaps some of them were not aware of?
I think that is definitely the case, and I think the other guests definitely mentioned that very well and has worded it very well, that this increased Zionist repression is not born of confidence, but it's born of fear and uncertainty. There would be no need to curtail public opinion so much, to curtail free speech so much, if there was no problem for the Zionists to work with. And I think, indeed, as you have mentioned, when these conflicts happened, like over the summer, when the bombings of the Gaza Strip happened, and these numerous war crimes, which are nothing new, of course, which have been going on for over 70 years in Palestine, ever since 1948. But the difference now is that thanks in many ways, due to social media, due to the accessibility of audiovisual media across the world nowadays, we have ways to circumvent the single viewpoint that the mainstream imperialist media has been spoon-feeding people for so many decades. We see now what is going on. We see what has happened, and of course there will always be pundits and political commentators and politicians who are trying to justify this. But I think it really speaks to the fundamental humanity of many people. Be they don't have to be Muslim, they don't have to be Arab, but that has no bearing on it anymore nowadays. It speaks to the fundamental humanity.